I'll describe what we did next as if we had just done it. In the act, though, it was, as the old joke goes, a whole hour's work packed into just one 24-hour day. It would have been 24 days, though, if not for our support cells on the ground, keeping track of what we were doing and coming up with ways to make it easier. During rest breaks, ruthlessly enforced by our private physicians, I learned that Archibald's cell was in a drained swimming pool in a triangle arc parochial suvin, and Leo's was on an unmarked Drummond parked at a maintenance depot. And as slowly became plain, each of these cells was in turn being supported by networks of other cells out there in the anti-swarm. Work began with disentangling and sorting the goods we had hauled in during that first feverish 20 minutes. Surve tended to Jules Verne Durand and to Fra Jad. Both ended up being fine. The Lateran was weak from lack of nutrition and had suffered more from the ride up to orbit. It simply took him longer to become himself again. It wasn't really clear what had happened to Fra Jad. He was unresponsive for a while, though his vital signs were in acceptable ranges and his eyes were open. Eventually, he requested that Surve leave off pestering him. Then he dropped off the reticule and did nothing for an hour. Finally, he began to move and to take part in the unpacking. I wondered who was in his support cell. The fuzzballs we stripped off, wadded up, and got out of the way. The payloads we strapped together with poly ties, just so they wouldn't drift out from the shelter of the balloon and give away our position. We rigged the payload cluster to a Magnifique and used its thrusters for station keeping. The balloon's low mass and high drag made it inevitable that we'd drift out from under its shelter unless we tapped the thrusters every so often to slow ourselves down. If we did this for more than a couple of days, we'd re-enter the atmosphere along with the balloon, and there would be a sort of race to see whether incineration or crushing deceleration would kill us first. But we had no intention of hanging around that long. Archibald, Ossa, and I assembled the decoy, while the rest of Cell 317 assembled the cold black mirror. The decoy was erected on a base consisting of 7 Magnifiques lashed together in a hexagonal array. We scavenged propellants from the blue payloads, just as Sura Esma had earlier done with water, and loaded it into the decoy's tanks. That took care of propulsion. On top of this platform, we attached what looked like a big, unruly wad of fabric. It was an inflatable structure that had come up as a separate payload. There was a zipper in its side. We opened it and stuffed in everything we didn't need. Nets, leftover packing material, parts of other Magnifiques. Also, there were 4 mannequins dressed in coveralls. We closed the zipper to prevent all of that junk from drifting out and opened it from time to time as members of the other team came to us with stuff they wanted to get rid of. But we didn't inflate it yet, because space on this side of the balloon was tight and getting tighter as the cold black mirror took shape. My description of the cold black mirror might make it sound heavy, but like everything else up here, it weighed practically nothing because it was slapped together of inflatable struts, memory wire, membranes, and aerogels, 50 feet on a side. Its upper surface was perfectly flat. It was a membrane stretched like a drumhead between knife edges and perfectly reflective. It was made of stuff that would reflect not only visible light, but microwaves, the frequencies that the geometers used for radar. When we ventured out from behind the balloon, we would keep it between us and the Dabanernud, but angled like a shed roof, so that their radar beams, as they swept across our vicinity, would be bounced off in some other direction. We'd still make a big echo, but it would never come anywhere near the Dabanernud, and never show up on their screens. As long as we were careful about which way the mirror was pointing, we would not be visible against the backdrop of space, because the mirror would be reflecting some other part of space, and all space looked more or less the same. Black. If they just happened to zoom in on us with a really good telescope, they might happen to notice a star or two in the wrong place, but this was unlikely. When we passed between the Dabanernud and the luminous surface of Arb, it would be a different matter. But we were hoping that a 50-by-50-foot snatch of absolute blackness might go unnoticed on a backdrop 8,000 miles across. It would be like a single bacterium on a dinner plate. If the mirror were permitted to get warm, it would emit infrared light that the geometers might notice. And so most of the ingenuity that had been spent on its design had been devoted to keeping it cold. It was laced with solid-state chillers that were powered by the nuke. The nuke, as Jessery had mentioned, produced a lot of waste heat. This would show up like a casino on infrared, if we were dumb enough to shine it at the Dabbenernud. But as long as we kept the radiators hidden beneath the coal-black mirror and pointed in the direction of Arb, the geometers would not have a line of sight that would make it possible for them to see it. Propulsion was, to get us started, 3 scavenged Monyafiques, and, for later, a reel of string. Our spacesuits would serve as living quarters, beds, toilets, refectories, drugstores, and entertainment centers. But not as cloisters. Space travel had any number of interesting features, but quiet contemplation was not among them. During Appert, and later when we had been evoked, the worst part of the culture shock had been the Jijas. There was no estimating how many times I'd said to myself, "Thank Cardus I'm not chained to one of those awful things." But this was like living inside of a Jija, a super ultra mega Jija, whose screen wrapped all the way around my field of vision, whose speakers were jacked into my ears, whose microphone transmitted every word, breath, and sigh to attentive listeners on the other end of the line. Part of it was even inside of me. That huge temperature transponder.